I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
What a season it has been for Notre Dame to get to 11-0 with an impressive performance against the number 12 team in the country, Syracuse, 36-3. The Irish come to New York and get the job done against the Orange with a dominating performance for Brian Kelly's team.
That's how you heard it. That's how you watched it yesterday on NBC Sports. Welcome back in. Nick Shepkowski and Greg Gabriel with you up until noon today. Plenty of Bears already been discussed. Plenty of Bears Vikings still to be discussed. But there's a team that's one game away from playing in the college football playoff for the first time, and they're local and they're really damn good. So we're going to talk about them for a few minutes here as well. We'll go out to the hotline once again and welcome in none other from The Athletic, Notre Dame beat reporter there, Pete Sampson, kind enough to pick up the phone and join us this morning. Good morning, Pete. How are things?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
How you doing, Peter?
I'm on my way back to South Bend, stopping in Detroit, so your timing is perfect.
How's the weather in Detroit?
It's very white.
Is it? Your flight's not going to be delayed, is it?
I don't think so. I think I'm going to get home today at a reasonable hour, which would be better than the way into New Jersey on Friday.
Pete, you've been covering Notre Dame a long time, first with Irish Illustrated, now with The Athletic. The Irish look like they have a great opportunity to reach the college football playoff for the first time. One big game left, and while USC isn't having a very good season, that game scares me a little bit because it is SC. Game is out in L.A., and you know the SC team is going to be sky high. But what's your take on this Notre Dame team to date, especially after the game yesterday?
I think that it is a team that I want to say that they're overachieving. I don't want that to come across as like a dig at what they are. I just think that they are getting so much more out of their talent than the actual raw material that they have. And I mean that is 100% a compliment to offensive coordinator Chip Long and defensive coordinator Clark Lee. I just think that the job that they're doing, and that it really showed yesterday against Syracuse, they're just getting a ton out of what they have right now. And I think in some ways that's what separates this group from the 2012 is like they're getting it on both sides of the ball. It's not a one-handed team like that one was with Manti Te'o. I mean, they can beat you any number of different ways, and that's not something that we've seen from Notre Dame at this level in quite a while.
And since you brought up 2012 there, in terms of depth, talent on this roster, offense is obviously worlds ahead of what that 2012 offense was. Ian Book, not exactly Everett Golson back there. But in terms of both sides of the ball, talent and depth-wise, how would those two teams match up?
I mean, I think this team is better, which I never thought I would say at the beginning of the season because of the offense you mentioned. But I think even defensively, that the 2012 group was so big and strong and just huge. And this team is kind of one that cuts against the Notre Dame narrative of they lack team speed or they're just slow. On the defensive line, they are super fast and can get after everybody. And that's why the USC game doesn't necessarily scare me that much, is because Notre Dame's defensive line is just going to eat that offensive line alive. And what they have at the back end of the defense is better than what they've had in 10, 15 years. So it's they might not have a Manti Te'o type of player anywhere, but I think 1 through 11, this is a defense that doesn't have holes in it. And I think in 2012, they were so good at a few spots that it masked some shortcomings that defense actually had.
I agree with you on the defense. I think defensively they can match up against you know, some of the other top teams in the country, Clemson, Alabama, as far as personnel on defense. What scares me once they get to the playoffs is the Clemson defense is very strong. The Alabama defense might be even stronger. Both teams have NFL players across the defensive line, and I just don't see the Notre Dame offensive line being able to hold up, especially the right side of the offensive line, once they get into that playoff game.
I completely agree with you. I think that's where Notre Dame sort of hits a pretty hard ceiling, and the Alex Barrs injury comes back and hurts them. It's so ironic because I think Notre Dame in the past, it was, well, you can't have elite defensive lines here, so you better be able to block them. Well, now the reverse is true. I think Notre Dame has an elite defensive line, but their offensive line is just average. So that's, I agree. Like, you get into Alabama, Clemson, will Notre Dame be able to block them? Probably not. With Ian Book's mobility and the fact that they're comfortable with him throwing 35 plus times a game, I think that's what they're going to have to do once they get to that high, high level on December 29th, assuming they get past USC.
Yeah, they're going to have to, I think, just have a lot of quick passes, get the ball out of Book hand very, very quickly, and that will give them an opportunity, and that could also open up the running game. And it's not like, you know, Alabama and Clemson are infallible, but I just think when you look at the matchup between the defenses and the offense, there's a big gap between those teams. What was your take on yesterday's game? I thought there were some Notre Dame boosters that were upset by the score. I thought they should have won the game by a lot more. I thought actually the playing field hurt them a little bit. Like the interception that Book threw, he stumbled going back from center and then just kind of threw the ball as he was going down. And you look at some of the divots that came out, that was a newly sodded turf, and they had the snow on Thursday. I think that affected what Notre Dame could do on offense. How do you see it?
I think it slowed him down a little bit. I mean, you mentioned the Book sort of trip and pick, like a play before Chris Fink stumbles going into the end zone and leads to the play where Book is still out there. They really should have scored one play earlier. But, I mean, to beat, look, Syracuse, were they really an 8-2 team? I think they were probably an 8-2 team that was really more like 5-5. But to beat them by 33 points, I think, is still pretty impressive. I thought the job Clark Lee did was fantastic. I mean, Syracuse is averaging 44 points a game, and basically they shut them out until kind of a whimpering field goal with 10 seconds left. So, defensively, I think Notre Dame took a huge step forward, and it's a box score that you didn't even have to watch the game to look at and think, like, wow, Notre Dame's playing really well. I think that's the biggest takeaway for me is, and forget, like, are they close to Alabama or Clemson or how much farther are they ahead from Michigan or whatever. I just think the fact that Notre Dame is playing really good football, they're not just winning in November, which has been a challenge, they're improving in November. That I think ultimately is, you know, whether they should have won by 40 or 50, they're playing really good football right now at a time of the year when they really haven't for the last 6 years.
Pete, with the 36-3 win yesterday over Syracuse, will that be enough to, on Tuesday night when they're announced as number 3 team in the college football playoff, will that be enough to not have a 20-minute discussion if they're worthy of the number 3 seed?
Yeah, I mean, can't we start talking about Michigan versus Georgia as who's number 4? Because I really, to me, that's like Notre Dame is the clear number 3. They're ahead of Michigan. They, besides the fact that they beat them head-to-head, and they're behind Alabama and Clemson, that's fine. Somebody has to be number 3, and I think Notre Dame has earned the right to feel confident about where they are. I just think there's very little to say about Notre Dame anymore after yesterday about do they deserve to be where they are. And it was interesting to hear Dino Babers, Syracuse's coach, really sort of stump for Notre Dame a little bit, because very rarely do you hear opposing coaches compare Notre Dame favorably to teams in their own conference or being better than other teams that they played. But Babers said, like, look, Notre Dame is right there with Clemson. We've played both of them. So, Notre Dame's number 3. There's really, I think, no discussion to be had. It certainly is not going to fill a 20-minute block on the selection show.
Well, Syracuse almost beat Clemson at Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And it's like, okay, Trevor Lawrence gets hurt in that game. Kelly Bryant had just left the team. They're playing their third-string quarterback. That was, I think, as well as Clemson has played defensively all year. But I just think that Clemson, that there's just such a different set of circumstances compared to Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame is really peaking right now, and Syracuse is really starting to come back to earth with the lack of depth that they have once Eric Dungy gets hurt. They really had very few answers offensively.
Spent a lot of time talking the defensive side of the ball. The offensive side of the ball, though, Miles Boykin gets a lot of love here. Local kid, went to Providence High School, always a football factory there. Are my eyes mistaking me? Because it feels like Chase Claypool, the last three games or so, has just absolutely taken off to, I don't want to say levels that are unseen for him, but did not see this coming in the first half of the year.
No, I think there's just a consistency in performance with Chase Claypool, which has always been his big thing. Like, the athletic part of it was a no-brainer. He's got some freaky talent, but mentally he just has not been able to stack up performances back to back to back, and that's happening now. So when you put him on the wide side of the field and put Miles Boykin on the short side of the field, those are, someone's going to have a good matchup between those guys. Are both 6'4", 6'5", super athletic, 225-pound type receivers. It just, and then Ian Book has to decide, okay, what's the better option? It's just a very good place for Notre Dame to be when you have two receivers with that kind of physical strength and ability on flanking you every single play.
You know, speaking of Chase Claypool, some friends of mine who are scouts in the league have gone into Notre Dame recently, and there's talk that he will look into coming out and entering the 2019 draft. Now, most of the scouts I talk to think he needs to stay in school, but it's not a sure shot that he is going to be back at Notre Dame next year.
Oh, I absolutely. I mean, this is one of the things with Chase Claypool. He was thinking about going to the NFL before the 2017 season started. Not that he could declare, but like, his mind has always sort of been wandering beyond Notre Dame. And I think that's really one of the secrets to his success this year. He's been able to compartmentalize, okay, I want to play in the pros, but I need to stop thinking about playing in the pros. I need to think about performing in college, and then the pro stuff will come. I am very curious to see what Claypool and Boykin do. I believe Boykin will be back based on talking to people who know him on campus. But to come back with Ian Book, you would think Ian Book would get better. The offensive line should be just as good next year, which is fine. Both those guys are going to catch 60, 70 balls, push 1,000 yards, have 8 or 9 touchdowns. I mean, they're going to have a chance to really showcase themselves all year next season if they choose to come back.
Well, you know, the key is with these kids who want to leave school early, and the kids don't understand it. You and I have had this conversation before, but are they mentally mature enough to compete against men at a high level? And a lot of times they think, okay, I've had a great college career, but they're just not mature enough to take that next step and be a professional athlete, be it, you know, football, baseball, basketball, or whatever. And, you know, just some of the things you say about Claypool. And I would think, you know, with Boykin, he looks like he could make the jump right now. Claypool, you know, there's been inconsistency, but the one thing he has going for him from the physical standpoint is he's an excellent special teams player. And just because of that ability alone, that's going to give him a pretty good chance to make a roster.
Yeah, and I think it's, Matt, might be a nod for him going this year, is like, he's mature enough to be a special teams player right away. But if he wants to be a lead receiver at some point in his pro career, then he's got some maturation to happen on that side. But you're absolutely right. And, you know, the staff here has told him, look, you're going to make money playing special teams. There's no question about it. Because you watch him cover kickoffs, he's the first guy down there all the time. He's got the physical ability that I think goes beyond Miles Boykin a little bit, but from the maturity standpoint, that's where Boykin, I think, is ahead of Claypool.
Pete, since special teams came up here a little bit, if it's not for some of the special teams falters this year, the kickoff return against Michigan, the kickoff return against Pitt, the blocked punt that set up a very short touchdown against Northwestern, how much differently is this team perceived in terms of, I mean, not necessarily blowout wins, but more handed wins on the schedule?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it would make yesterday less significant because they would have beaten up a handful of other teams by double digits going away. I think that's why the Michigan game was closer than it should have been. That's why they were down against Pittsburgh in the fourth quarter. You know, that's why Northwestern got tight at the end. So, yeah, I think that's really a significant part of people's analysis of Notre Dame that, look, I don't want to dismiss those plays because special teams count, but you would think that a team that's competing for the playoff would be able to get that stuff fixed. And I think yesterday they actually had a pretty good day on special teams in terms of, like, their coverage units and the kicking operation. So, I mean, overall, that's stuff that they should get fixed out because Notre Dame has the athletes to throw out there, and they should be able to run down every kick and not let things like that happen.
And I know that it means a lot to Brian Kelly to win rivalry trophies, and USC coming next week and the shillelagh that they play for. How much more would it mean to make sure that USC finishes with seven losses and keep them from going to a bowl game?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. And I think that when you're talking about Notre Dame and the pressure of going 12-0 and how does that get to you or not get to you, I think playing USC helps because that's just a big deal for Notre Dame, whether you were going into this game at 4-7 or you're going in at 11-0. I think it helps Notre Dame stay focused about it. I mean, there's some recruiting elements involved there, too. There are plenty of guys on USC's roster that Notre Dame would love to have. And so for the next group of California 4- and 5-star guys, you can go out there and say, hey, we're 12-0, and they're 5-7. So, you know, I think that just sort of the rivalry aspect of it is quite helpful for Notre Dame this weekend in terms of focus and feeling like, okay, our goal is the playoff, but our goal today, as in next Saturday, will just beat USC.
Pete, appreciate you taking the time this morning. Enjoy whatever time you have left in Detroit, and we'll do it again soon.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Talk to you later, Pete. Thanks.
Take care, Greg.
Pete Sampson from The Athletic, at Pete Sampson _ on Twitter is where you can find him. I mean, from what I've seen of USC this year, I get it. It's a rivalry game. I get it. It's like the crazy travel Notre Dame's had from the Navy game in San Diego to Northwestern to a home game to the East Coast, now back to the West Coast. It's crazy, and yeah, it adds up. But in terms of where teams are at, in terms of what they're playing for right now, I have trouble believing they have. I mean, you mentioned before that you have a little bit of worry about that game. What is it that sticks out?
The worry is that it's a rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the players are going to be sky high for the game. Now, you would think the players would have been sky high for the UCLA game yesterday.
Town.
I mean, because that's the crosstown rivalry. But for some reason, it always – and USC's dominated that UCLA rivalry. But for some reason, the Notre Dame game is a bigger game to them. And I just think that I don't want to call it a trap game.
Yeah.
And I think when you compare personnel and the fact that USC is playing with a freshman quarterback who has not been, you know, lights out type of football player, that this should be an easy win for Notre Dame. But in rivalry games like that, anything can happen. If you get a couple key turnovers that, you know, you get a pick six or something mm-hmm. like that, that can change the outcome of the game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Can change and can change real fast. Some more Bears and Vikings preview to get to coming up. We'll talk to Adam Kaplan, take a look around the NFL at 11 a.m. with him, and former Bears general manager Jerry Angelo joins us an hour from now. Tons of Bears Vikings preview to get to as well. If you want to chime in, 312-644-6767. Nick Szczepkowski, Greg Gabriel with you up until noon today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Lots, he's a very accurate passer. He's a very good diagnoser of defenses. Knows where to go with the ball based upon the route they have called versus the coverage you have called. He's a very good processor of the information. He's accurate when he throws it, and he's got a deceptively very strong arm that I don't think he gets enough credit for.
At the voice of Bears defensive coordinator Vic Fangio, welcome back in as he was discussing Kirk Cousins and what's to come in the form of the Minnesota Vikings offense tonight at Soldier Field, the first home Sunday night game at Soldier Field since all the way back in 2012. Been forever. The Texans, last time they were here back in 2012, that ugly, sloppy, muddy, rain-filled game the Bears lost. It's been that dang long since they've hosted a Sunday Night Football game. Welcome back in. Nick Szczepkowski and Greg Gabriel with you, 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Taking your telephone calls, taking your text messages as well, getting you ready for Bears-Vikings. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. Text messages welcome as well, 67011. And Eli, our fine producer, Eli Herskovich, on the other side of the glass today, came back with a cut there on Fangio discussing what Kirk Cousins does well, why he scares him, all of that. And I look at it, and much was made earlier this week of, oh, well, Cousins in his career, he's, what, 4-21 all-time against teams above 500. He's never been a guy that scares me in anything that he does. I look, watching his teams on the Redskins, it's just kind of a guy, and his numbers scream, oh my goodness, all these passing yards, all this, all that. It's like, well, they're trailing constantly when he was in. I don't know the big moment that he's had in his career. I'm still kind of waiting on that, besides the when he's running off the field yelling at the camera, you like that, you like that. I'm not saying he's a bad player by any means, but I'd be real hesitant to say that I'm scared of anything he necessarily does on a field, too.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, when I look at Kirk Cousins, I look at a quarterback that's very efficient. And he doesn't have the big arm. And you look at the receivers on the Viking roster, except for Diggs, they're not a team that scares you as far as the deep ball.
Mm-hmm.
But Cousins, 71.4% completion percentage this year. He gets the ball out of his hand. He reads defenses very well. He's excellent with the short ball, and you look at their game, it's a lot of nickel and dime stuff,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't make poor decisions, and he's very, very accurate. I mean, you don't throw 71% if you're not accurate. And I think, you know, what he does, he moves the chains. And now I think, you know, you're going to get Cook back, and he came back last week, ran for, I think, 80 yards, almost a 10-yard average last week. I think that's another element to their offense that the Bears are going to have to worry about and defense.
That's Greg Gabriel. I'm Nick Szczepkowski, 312-644-6767. You want to chime in on the conversation today? Hey, coming up today and tonight, if you're out and about in the western suburbs, this is one of the finest locations you can go to see Bears pregame, Bears postgame. Hub Arkish, Patrick Manley are going to be out at the Piazza, 85 Executive Drive in Aurora, right by the Fox Valley Mall if you're from that area whatsoever. From 4 to 7:20 tonight will be Hub and Manley. Then immediately following the game, roughly 10:30 at night until 12:30 or so, it will be Hub again, then Olin Krutz and Big Cat James Williams. They'll be out there at the Piazza, 85 Executive Drive in Aurora. You can join them and Bud Light for the Bears pre- and post-game shows at the Piazza in Aurora. Two hours after the game, see Big Cat, see Olin, see Hub. Come meet the guys, watch the game, enjoy Bud Light specials. Brought to you by Bud Light, game day's favorite light lager. This hour on The Score, by the way, being brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. And we go out to Rolling Meadows. John has thoughts on tonight's Bears game. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. You know, I'm used to the Bears getting off the bus running. And this year, their running attack has been minimal at best. And against a team like Minnesota, and you can say the same thing about Minnesota, because I don't know what their running game is like. I haven't seen enough of them. But for the Bears, if they don't get some kind of running game going, that gives Minnesota the knowledge that the Bears are going to be one-dimensional. You can take out one of their receivers and make him go to a receiver he doesn't feel as comfortable with. I think Minnesota can win this game.
Well, Minnesota, you know, if you looked at the Bears' schedule at the beginning of the season, everybody had Minnesota, if not going to the Super Bowl, at least going to the NFC Championship game. You know, they were touted as being one of the best teams in the NFC. Right now, the Bears are ahead of them in the NFC North standings. What I think is unique, and this offense is right now a pass-first, run-second offense, but what is unique is that there is no set number one receiver, number two receiver. That changes from week to week, mm-hmm. and that's by design. and where Allen Robinson could be the go-to guy 1 week, depending on what the matchups are and what the game plan is. Taylor Gabriel could be the next week, and Miller could be the following week. And I think this week, because you've got a new guy coming in, and Adam Shaheen, there's no tape. He's actually got the run game because of his size and blocking on the perimeter. He's a lot bigger than Trey Burton is to line up at that Y position at the end of the line of scrimmage. So I think that's going to help the run game a little. I agree with you. There is concern about the run game. There's been concern all year. But at the same time, the Bears are scoring points like they haven't since I've been here, and I've been here since 2001.
Yeah, it's a weird Bears team to watch because you're just so not used to watching or seeing what you're watching, at least of offense comes on the field and you have confidence in it. It's that's not usually the case when you watch these Bears teams. And yeah, I kind of piggybacking on what you said there in terms of game plan and who's the targeted receiver and who has the big days offensively. Like, it's crazy if you've watched the first half of this season and how good Gabriel's been. Because I think that you thought Taylor Gabriel, if you saw him from afar, oh, that's a speed guy in Atlanta. He's not Julio Jones. He wasn't Mohamed Sanu. He wasn't some of the other big names that they had. Roddy White was there, I think, at the end of Roddy White's career. Gabriel was just starting to get going there. And you thought, okay, well, maybe that's just a speed guy. That's your over-the-top burner type of guy. He's had huge games time and time again this year. Then the last week, was it the slight overthrow by Trubisky? Other than that, I don't even know if he was targeted besides that. And it's like completely almost taking out of the game plan. Allen Robinson has a monster performance like he's paid to do. And it's just, you don't know who's going to beat you, but chances are the way this offense humming right now, someone is going to.
Well, that's by design, Nick. Mm-hmm. And I think they go into each game looking at different matchups, depending on what the personnel is on the opponent's team. And then they go in saying, okay, in this game, we expect Allen Robinson to have he's going to be the go-to guy in this game, where it's going to be a different guy the following week, depending on what the other team is showing. And a lot of things about this offense is the matchups, and you try to create mismatches. That's why I keep bringing up Shaheen. Here's a guy, he's almost 6'6", he's 265 pounds, he runs really well. And one thing is, compared to last year, what I noticed in training camp and the early preseason games before he got hurt, he's a lot leaner. He lost weight from last year and better condition. You know, he came from a Division II program. So, you know, it was going to take him time to adjust to playing in the NFL. But at least a step faster, a lot quicker, in and out of cuts quicker. I thought totally different player from what I saw in the preseason. That's why I'm excited to see what he's going to be doing tonight.
That's Greg Gabriel. I'm Nick Szczepkowski talking Bears with you, getting you ready for Bears and Vikings tonight, 7:20, right at Soldier Field is where you'll see that one on NBC, of course, for Sunday Night Football. Coming up tonight, like I said, the pregame show comes your way 4 o'clock this evening, this afternoon, I should say, from the Piazza, 85 Executive Drive in Aurora, Atlanta, listening on 670thescore.com. It's Aaron next up on the score. What's up, Aaron?
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. Just for me, traditionally, the Chicago offensive ingredients has always been to be concerned about the running games and how we'll be perceived in the winter seasons. And we've watched Green Bay for years with Favre and Rodgers throw the ball with a moderate running game. And now we've got a team that has a scheme that they throw the ball, and you guys stole my thunder, they spread it around. So the average defense can't come into Chicago saying we're going to concern ourselves with shutting down the running game, Jordan Howard. I think Chicago should take, as a fan, to take a step back and enjoy the fact that we've got an offensive coach who understands today's narrative and getting the ball downfield in different variety of ways. So, again, Chicago, I say relax. Don't worry about the running game. Be happy that you got an offensive-minded coach. And thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it, Aaron. I think the part that I'm most excited about with this is in going into the year, I thought some of the expectations early on of Mitch Trubisky, of Matt Nagy, of this offense as a whole were a little absurd. I get it. It's a win-now league. I mean, you don't win within 2 years, 3 years, you're out of a job. But some of the expectations of, like, oh, because he's from Andy Reid and because he comes with so much pizzazz, and because of how much was spent in free agency, this offense is going to be great from week one. And it was awesome for 2 drives against Green Bay, and then it was non-existent for the rest of that game. But you've seen it grow. You've seen, obviously, the quarterback in it become more and more comfortable, learn his ways all the way to being the NFL Offensive Player of the Week a week ago, level that some people didn't want to ever think that Mitch Trubisky was going to get to, even though we're only halfway through his second year. I'm curious how much a running game can grow in that. You've seen the passing game. You've seen the quarterback develop. You've seen schematically the offense take off passing-wise. I'm curious how much that can change, though, as you, it's always kind of like the chess match and mixing and matching type of deal, how much more the growth the running game could have from what's there.
Well, I think if you look at Kansas City, and that's where this offense comes from, their running game has been excellent, and it's been excellent for years. I think, you know, but schematically, getting the right people on the offensive line, getting the blocking set up the way it should be. I think that all plays into it. Now we're not a we're not allowed to watch practice.
Sure.
You know, once they break camp and they're up at Halas Hall, I think from a coaching standpoint, they've put a bigger emphasis on the pass game to get the pass game going, and they haven't put as much emphasis on the run game. It's something that needs to be done. It needs to improve. There's no question it needs to improve. But at the same time, I think if we watch the growth of Mitch Trubisky from the beginning of the season to now, it's been huge. I mean, you look at the numbers, he's 65.5% completion percentage, 2,300 yards. He's got a 7.9 average per attempt, which is a very good number. 19 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He's having a hell of a season. And I think if you asked any of us back in August, said, you know, if Trubisky can throw for 25 touchdowns and 3,600 yards, are you going to be happy? It's going to be a unanimous mm-hmm. opinion. Yeah, that's a great season. Well, you know what? He's probably going to surpass that because he's almost there now, and we still got 7 games to go.
That's great, Gabriel. I'm Nick Shepkowski. Bottom of the hour being brought to you by Get Covered Illinois. There are only a few weeks left to enroll in a health plan on Get Covered Illinois. Must sign up for a plan by December 15th to start 2019 with the coverage you need. Go to getcoveredillinois.gov or call 1-866-311-1119 to shop for a plan or schedule free in-person help. Our number, 312-644-6767. As always, text messages welcome 67011. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Adam Kaplan will join us. Take a look around the league with him. 11:20, Jerry Angelo, former Bears general manager, picks up the phone and will talk with us then as well. Bottom of the hour being brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to catch the Cats at Ryan Field this fall. Northwestern hosts Illinois on November 24th for Senior Day. Tickets on sale now. NUSports.com. 312-644-6767. Talking Bears and Vikings, getting ready for the Sunday night affair at Soldier Field tonight. It's Nick Shepkowski and Greg Gabriel.
Good feet, good eyes, and I just played with conviction. I made a decision that I was just I was in a good mind state to just go out there, play confident. My teammates had my back, and it all came down to execution, and really my teammates played really well, and they played their tails off, and that was just me out there doing my job and going out there having fun and playing confident. And as a result of that, I had one of my better games, but all the credit goes to my teammates for them doing their jobs and playing their tails off.
Mitch Trubisky right there discussing his showing last week against the Detroit Lions. Played well enough to earn honors for Offensive Player of the Week. And I think the cast from Bull Durham on the old cliches that they go over of, oh, it's a team game and just happy to be here and whatever else. I think those guys would be happy with what Mitch Trubisky had to say to the media. His media training apparently going well. But welcome back in. Nick Shepkowski, Greg Gabriel with you up until noon today, getting you set for Bears and Vikings tonight on the lakefront. A 7:20 kickoff between the Bears and Vikes on Sunday Night Football. Taking
your
telephone calls.
We got to play them one day at a time. I'm just happy to be here. Hope I can help the ball club. I just want to give it my best shot. And the good Lord willing, things will work out.
That's exactly what Mitch Trubisky sounded like to me. Just saying nothing up. It's the teammates. They did great. And I'm enjoyable. And we're giving it our best shot. And
So immediately Bull Durham popped in my head, like so many people, not in just the NFL, not just the Bears. It's sports as a whole anymore. It's the media training, and you don't get a whole lot from there. But with that said, breaking down the Bears and the Vikings today and taking your telephone calls, 312-644-6767, where are you at in the development of Trubisky? Because you had Michael Lombardi a couple weeks ago. I don't know how you could have watched the Bears at all and not at least seen progression. Not saying like, oh my God, Trubisky's going to be a megastar or anything like that. I don't know how you could have watched either highlights, parts of games, and not at least noticed that there was a step. Like, yeah, it was kind of extreme to go to player of the week offensively, but my God, the guy had been getting better week after week.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up Mike Lombardi because
Mitch had not heard of him as of what, last Sunday? I never even heard of the guy, so I don't care what he thinks.
He'd been a guest on the Score for years. How did Mitch not hear of him? Anyway, Thursday morning I'm going to be co-hosting here 7 till 9 up until the pregame show at 9 o'clock. And one of the guests we have is Michael Lombardi, who I have known for 30 years. And he's a good friend. He's a good guy. And he's actually a very good evaluator.
You don't work to rise the ranks of the Patriots if you're not. It just was I didn't understand his thought.
But one of the things we're going to do is debate Mitch Trubisky, which I thought could be a lot of fun. You know,
sure.
Because right now Mike Lombardi is like public enemy number one in Chicago because of the things. And that's his feeling. He's allowed to have that feeling. But you know what I think it goes back to is the selection. And, okay, the Bears have, going into the draft, the third pick in the draft, they trade up from 3 to 2, and they take Trubisky, which means they didn't take Patrick Mahomes. They didn't take Deshaun Watson. And last year, Deshaun Watson, before he tore an ACL, had a great start to his career. Mahomes played a little bit in one game, some mop-up duty, started the last game. Numbers were very, very average. You didn't – looking at that game, you could not foresee what he has done this year.
Record pace of everything.
So I think what some of these critics do are saying, well, they took the wrong guy. Well, who knows? I mean, we're in year two of their career. There's a lot of football to be played. And to me, when I look at Mitch Trubisky, he is going through actually a second rookie year. He didn't have a real NFL offense last year. Yeah. They had terrible offensive coaching. When you talk to some people that really know and understand NFL football and NFL offenses, you know, they laugh at what was being done last year, be it fair or not. Now he comes in, he's got a whole new system he's got to learn. And then, you know, Alex Smith, who played in this offense in Kansas City for 5 years, it was the fourth year before he felt comfortable. This is Mahomes' second year in the system. Granted, he got to learn behind Alex Smith last year, but he still had the nuances of the system down as far as the mental reps going through training camp, going through the whole season. So he, you know, he should put up those numbers. And then, you know, you have a team in Kansas City that's now in their sixth year, I think, playing in that same system with a lot of the key elements of the offense. Where here, everybody's new to the system, not just the quarterback. You've got receivers that came from Jacksonville, Atlanta, Memphis University, and you're putting them together and trying to get this thing to click. It takes some time. What impresses me about Mitch, and this is, you know, going through the scouting process, one of the things you look at is football character, and that separates. You can get guys of equal talent, but the guy with the better football character is going to turn out to be the better player because he just has that strong desire to be a great player and to succeed. That's what I see about Mitch Trubisky. I think his football character is superlative, and he's going to do and take whatever time needs to be taken to become a great player, not only in this scheme, but in the National Football League, because who knows how long he's going to be playing in this scheme. You know, down the road, he's going to probably be playing for another coach. That's the way things are in the National Football League. But, you know, I think it's a fair argument to say, okay, Ryan Pace could have taken one of the other guys. He didn't. That's the guy he liked. That's the guy he wanted. That's the guy who's here. I don't care what the other guys do. I care what Mitch Trubisky does. And to me, that's the important thing. And he has the arrows going up. He's gotten better every week. I think he struggled with blitz pickup and reading blitzes and finding the hot receiver early in the season. Part of that had to do with not really being comfortable within the scheme. But I think as he's grown within this system, he's improved every week, and we still haven't come close to seeing how good he can be.
That's Greg Gabriel. I'm Nick Szczepkowski, 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. And it's interesting you bring up the draft part of it, of Ryan Pace trading up to get Trubisky. And I feel like I was in the minority on this, at least amongst Bears followers and fans of the Bears. Oh, how can you give up that many assets? How can you possibly do that to go get Trubisky? Well, if that's the guy that you circled, and that's the one that you think head and shoulders is going to be the franchise quarterback for the next decade, 12 years in the NFL, who cares about an extra third-round pick? How valuable a quarterback is, how much that means to the future of a general manager, you're not going to sit and nitpick over a third-round pick that you gave up in order to move up a spot in order to get there. Oh, gave up so much. If you have a franchise quarterback, if you have that guy who's going to Pro Bowls with semi-regularity, consistently leading a team on playoff runs or close to being on the verge of the playoffs, you're not going to care about the draft asset that goes away if he produces. And so far, yeah, year one was a wash because he's running an just ridiculously old-styled offense. It's going out on its way out in the NFL, at least I should say. And now you have that part of it that you're starting to see of Matt Nagy getting his system in, Trubisky growing each week. It's just so early for people that wanted to jump off the bandwagon or jump off the Mitch wagon that it's okay. Well, give the guy a little bit of time. He barely started in college. Yes, there's going to be growth that comes. You're seeing that, and hopefully it only continues to grow until the rest of this year.
Well, you know, I wrote an article, I think it was for 670 The Score, three or four weeks ago, and you compare Mitch's numbers, he's in his second year, against some of the top quarterbacks that are in the game now.
Mm-hmm.
He's way ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, but again, the argument is, yeah, but look what Patrick Mahomes is doing.
Well,
and
you don't have Travis Kelce to throw to here. You don't have Tyreek Hill burning by everybody in this offense. You know,
he may never be as good as Patrick Mahomes becomes. Who knows what future. We don't know the answer to that. The important thing is, does he win here? Do the Bears get in the playoffs? Can he get him into a NFC championship game? Can he get him into a Super Bowl? That's all that matters. And there's nothing, you know, and I think now we are only a year out from that 2017 draft, but I think you got three damn good quarterbacks that were in that draft, and all three of them are going to be very good pros. Who cares who took which one? You know, the idea is to help the team. You get the guy, you draft a guy you think is going to help your team moving forward. They got a guy that, at least in my opinion, they made a good decision.
Yeah, it's like what is the 83 draft when Elway went one and Marino was one of the last picks in the first round.
Jim Kelly was in there. You got three Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and you can ask all those teams, which one did you want? But I don't care. We threw them up in the air, and we got the one we got, you know, and they're happy
right
with it.
And then Ken O'Brien's in there, who had a pretty doggone good career, but he has the other three to compare himself to. He's like, oh, man, I thought I was okay for myself, but I guess I'm not ending up in Canton, or at least in the Super Bowl.
All three of those guys got to Super Bowls. Kelly never won one, but he got to four, mm-hmm. You know, and they're in the Hall of Fame. So, I mean, is that going to happen with the 2017 class? Who knows?
I mean,
it's way too early to say that, but they've gotten off to a pretty good start.
Yeah, and you have them playing extremely well right now. The Texans are on, a six-game winning streak. The Bears are sitting in first place right now, and Kansas City is a 9-1 team, 10 games in to this thing. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. Naperville and Elliott next up on The Score. What's up, Elliott?
Hey, guys. So there are some people that are disappointed with Mitch Trubisky's development. That's pretty evident, but I am very high on Mitch. I think the sky's the limit for him. I know it's probably hyperbolic comparison, but just as far as the physical tools, the size, and basically those two major things for quarterbacking, I think he can max out. Why can't he max out at Aaron Rodgers? He has the mobility. His release is very compact the way Aaron Rodgers is. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, he didn't start until he was 3 or 4 years into the NFL.
It was right? It was fourth year in the league he became a starter, but don't forget he had a Hall of Famer in front of him.
He did, but if Mitch keeps progressing this way, he's not. I'm not saying he's going to be Aaron Rodgers, but why not? He could be close.
The important thing is that he wins for the Chicago Bears, and you know who knows if he's going to become Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre or Joe Namath or whatever. It's you know midway through his second year in the league, but from what we've seen so far, the arrow's going up, and he keeps improving. Until we see something different, I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain. I'm also going to hold my horses on thinking that he's going to be perhaps the most talented quarterback in the history of the NFL, like Aaron Rodgers' his career has played out to be. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. It's Nick Szczepkowski, Greg Gabriel with you. Reminder, if you're out and about in the western burbs this afternoon, stop on by the Piazza, 85 Executive Drive in Aurora. It's right in that little mall loop type of deal by Fox Valley Mall. See the pregame show, see the postgame show tonight. Join the Score and Bud Light for the Bears pre- and post-game shows as Hub Arkish and Patrick Manley are live from 4 until kickoff. They'll be followed up by Hub, Olin Kreutz, James Big Cat Williams for 2 hours after the game. Come meet the guys, watch the game, enjoy Bud Light specials brought to you by Bud Light Game Day's favorite light beer. Coming up after this, Adam Kaplan breaks down the NFL as a whole for us. Jerry Angelo, former Bears general manager, in about 25 minutes. All to come in the 11 o'clock hour. Nick Szczepkowski and Greg Gabriel on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.